Hello and welcome, South Carolina, from the Midlands to the Upstate. We are happy to have you join the Yard Pros Show this morning, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is an absolute delight to be here. Is it?
It is.
Yes, it is. It is Saturday, October the 19th. Me, oh my, where has this year gone?
It went fast. And the cool weather's here?
Oh, yes, the cool weather is here.
I like it.
In the 40s for the upstate this week, last couple of mornings, right? Mm-hmm. Well, a little warmer this morning. Clouds rolling in, 50-something degrees. There's a lot going on, I'll tell you that. It's a busy.
It is.
It's a busy, right? Busy with what? Lawn care things? Landscape things? You look like you're having a fit over there. Are
I'm
you?
Good. Yep.
You sure? You having an issue?
Go ahead. Keep talking.
Yeah. Keep talking. Oh, you're trying to figure out which one of these headphone jacks work. Well, folks, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's an absolute delight to be here. You can find us during the week. It's pretty simple at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all of our retail stores throughout the great state of South Carolina, as well as really good, interesting information of what to do, when to do, how to do things in your landscape, how to plan. You know, what is your vision for your landscape long term? This time of the year is when I really begin to think about that. How about you, Scott?
Yes.
Do you really?
Yes.
What's your plan for your landscape?
What I do every year.
Rip everything out, pour concrete?
I do that every 3 years.
Every 3 years. Rip everything out, pour concrete?
No. I just pull shrubs up and then I replace every 3 years.
Really?
I do. But I only have 4 shrubs.
Oh. You should come to my house.
No.
You can pull them up.
No.
I'll let you.
Your house and Ryan's house? No.
No, you can come pull mine up. I don't have many left.
Do you not?
No, I've gotten rid of most of mine.
Ryan's is a jungle.
Yeah, no, I'm not into that. I like it simple.
Yep.
Plain and simple. A few foundation plantings, that's it. A little bit of pine straw twice a year to freshen it up. A little bit of fertilizer to make the grass grow. I will say,
we talked about that yesterday.
The grass is growing, man. It's nearly time to mow that new fescue. That Carolina Blue 2 is a kicking right now in a major, major way. But the weather has been so conducive to that. Cooler temps. Daytime temps are cooler. Nighttime temps are borderline chilly. I had to make a run up towards Chattanooga, Windstone Golf Club, and went and saw our good friends at Knob North, Gary Player Design that we renovated 2 years ago, the greens, in Dalton, Georgia. No, I didn't go by carpet. Should have, but I didn't. But, you know, making the trip up there to the mountains, it's Thursday morning. Man, I got out of the truck at one point, and it was 49 degrees at 10 o'clock in the morning. The wind's blowing 25 miles an hour. It was almost raw. I mean, really chilly. It was kind of a shock to the system because we were so hot through the month of September. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you know, the first week of October warm, and all of a sudden you get to the second week of October, and my goodness, what has happened? You know, it's really interesting because everybody, you know, has their thoughts of, oh, is the climate changing? Is it not changing? And, oh, it's for the worse. It's getting warmer. But I saw something interesting earlier this week on a local weather report that the temperatures into the 40s at night were about a week ahead of schedule when that normally happens in the state of South Carolina. You know, the first frost is typically in the mountains is around October. I'm talking frost, not freeze, sometime in late October. And if we keep trending the way we're trending, we may see that about the same time or maybe even a little bit earlier. So it's kind of got me confused. Can you imagine what the landscape's like? How confused it may be? You know, after all, we've gone from really hot, dry weather to really cool weather, possibly damp. We have that system. It was a tropical storm now I saw last night. Is moving in through the Gulf Coast, across Florida, through the Panhandle of Florida, may affect the winds and everything. From what I saw on the cone, may affect the coast of South Carolina at some point. Who knows? Oh, you just got to look at that radar, don't you? I need 20 minutes is all
That's
I need.
What I was going to say. Mills needs 20 to 30 minutes after
Past
the show.
Past the radio show, after the radio show. Just to
it's
get
not
the
gonna
front,
happen.
Just to get the front gutters cleaned out.
It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, leaves are beginning to drop. Gutters are full. I would say if you're listening to the show now and you're in the upstate and you hadn't seen rain yet, you may run out and clean the gutters. But don't do that. We need you to listen to the show. As a matter of fact, we need you to call into the show. 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. You can find us. And as always, you can text us at 71307. Here's a good text. Somebody's already texted us, Scott. I'm looking for perennial ryegrass, and I'm told by Ryan at your Dunkin' store that they are not getting any this year. Can you point me in the right direction for somewhere to find some in Spartanburg or Greer? Just need 50 pounds.
I will have you some Monday.
Yeah, we have plenty of that in the warehouse down at the farm.
And I have, I've got a whole pallet in, just brought it in Thursday afternoon. So I've got another full pallet. But call Ryan and have Ryan give me a shout and I'll bring it to you at Ryan's store Monday.
Yeah, maybe some confusion there. I'm not real sure, but the warehouse at the farm in Neesa, South Carolina, has some of that in inventory, correct?
Yeah, if I did take the last pallet.
Well, there's always more.
Yeah,
where that came from. May take if the warehouse is out, it may take a whopping 4 days to get it. But perennial ryegrass, if you're going to overseed, it needs to be done pretty quickly. Right behind this rain. I wouldn't rush out. If you haven't seeded your fescue lawn, you haven't overseeded your warm season lawn, if that's what you're inclined to do, I don't know if I'd rush out and do that this morning with the amount of rain coming. Last week we said let's do it. But we're talking close to an inch of rain in certain parts of the listening area, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, where was that 25 degrees, man? Where's that?
I always look at Bozeman, Montana.
Bozeman, Montana, 25 degrees right now.
Snow today, snow tomorrow, and snow Monday.
So, it's cooling off. It's cooling off. So, Scott, one of the things that's really interesting, if you'll put your phone up, I mean, you're worse than my kids, just saying. Thank you. Turn that thing upside down so you can't see the screen. I know what you're doing. So, here's what's really interesting. Because it's cooled down.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, we need a little drum roll for the weekly drought report. Here we go, folks. Last week, 77% of the great state of South Carolina was in some form of drought. This week, 81.3%. It has grown. Although it's gotten cooler, the drought conditions have grown. Now, part of this, Scott, humidity drop. Mm-hmm. Cool weather comes in, humidity drops, a little bit windy. Guess what happens? Drier air dries things out. What's really interesting, and let's see here. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. The amount of D3 extreme drought has grown from 7% to 8.6. So a nearly 2%, a 1.5%, 2% increase of land mass in the state of South Carolina that has gone from severe drought, D2, to D3 extreme drought. So Greenville County, I mean, two-thirds of Greenville County, from the 85 corridor south all the way through Greenville County, top part of Lawrence County, half of Anderson County now, where your store resides in Anderson, mm-hmm. is all under extreme drought, which is D3. We only go up to D4, which is exceptional, okay? It's been a while since I've seen D4 in the state of South Carolina, but D3 is pretty rough. We see that all of York County. Richland County in that area is about the same. Now it's creeping into Orangeburg County, some extreme drought. It is dry out there. Leaves are beginning to fall. It is dry out there. One thing I would like to say, a little bit of public service announcement, is be careful. I mean, it's cooling down. We had a little fire, patio fire this week, Monday night, I guess. Well, maybe it was Sunday night. Kids were home for fall break from college. And decided to hang out, maybe it was Sunday night, and had a nice little fire. It was nice and cool. Keep those fires kind of small and keep them contained, and please have a hose nearby. It is really dry out there. I mean, you just wouldn't imagine. Saw a guy up in Dalton. We were riding the golf course looking at the greens and saw a bunch of smoke in one area. There's a homeowner burning the underbrush. And that county is in as bad, maybe worse shape than Greenville County. And just – kind of blew our hair back because the sad thing, oh, well, there's grass all around me. And, yeah, the Bermuda grass on the golf course still has a little bit of green color, but there's a lot of chaff in there. The grass, you know, the warm season grasses are beginning to slow down. They've almost come to a screeching halt. And as these dry, low humidity days, that stuff, I mean, it's just tender. And, it, you know, for a fire, and you throw a match to it, and it's going to burn up. No doubt about it. It can get out of control very quickly. So, yeah, hopefully this rain that we get today will begin to put a little dent in this. You know, my fear is, Scott, if you know, we get one rain event today, clears out, it's going to be sunny tomorrow, right? If we don't get rain again pretty quickly behind it, I don't know how much good it's going to do. I mean, it might help us for the short term, but how much good is it going to help us long term? That's my concern. Because it is extremely dry out there. Scott, we're going to go to Wayne in the Honeyapath. Hello, Wayne, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, how you doing? I just have a quick question. I have some trails in my woods that are washing, and I'm going to have, well, obviously not for a long time, but last spring and last winter they washed pretty good. And I'm getting them fixed hopefully tomorrow, depending on how much rain we get. And I'm looking to put some kind of cover crop, not crop, but under, you know, whatever you want to call it, to stabilize the dirt, to not have it wash so much. I have same thing in a pasture. I've got one area that's pretty steep and it's washed and it's basically bare clay. I want to rough it up, but I want to put something in there that'll stabilize the ground. I just don't know what to put.
Scott, what are your thoughts? I got a few ideas. I mean, it's in a residential setting, correct, Wayne, or is it out in the woods?
No, I'm out. Well, the pasture is in a pasture. I mean, I'm out in the middle of nowhere, so no, I'm not in a residential area. I'm in the woods. The trails are in the woods, very little sunlight, actually. So that's kind of my concern.
There's a couple of things that are native, if you can find them. If it's your property, you have the right to do this. If you can find them and you can transplant them. One of them is club moss. Some people may call it ground cedar. Or ground pine, I've heard that as well. Ground cedar is probably a little more common name. Club moss, and it looks, the reason they call it ground cedar, it looks like a little cedar leaf or something. That is a native. If you can find it in some dark areas, really rich soil, and try to transplant that, that's an option. Another kind of trailing that I see along trails is another product or another plant out there called partridge berry. Has a very small rounded leaf and a bright red berry about this time of the year. So if you start looking down, maybe you see these ground covers. Now's a good time once we get this rain soften the soil, try to transplant some of this. Another thing that comes to mind from a landscape standpoint or a commercial nursery standpoint, Scott, that I think Wayne could utilize is something like Vinca minor. Not Vinca major, not the one that trails and starts to climb up plants and whatnot, but Vinca minor is a more compacted perennial periwinkle that does really well in our area, will tolerate some shade, and grows pretty quickly. Now, as you walk through this, in any of these plants, as you walk a trail through it, certainly, you know, you're going to erode or you're going to compact that soil, that plant's going to be very difficult to grow. But a small walking trail, if we're surrounded by both sides with a ground cover, should stay fairly well contained.
What do you think about the pasture that he was, that one side of the pasture?
As far as what?
A wash.
A wash in there, you know, one of the things you could do, and if you really want hiking, walking trails, is take some timbers and go out and begin to step some areas. It's not that difficult to do. 6x6 pressure treated works really well. Drill holes through them, drive rebar into it to hold it. And if you kind of level out those walking areas, Wayne, build it like you would a natural or a normal hiking trail in the woods. Because if you think about
Actually, on the pasture, I'm not looking to walk on it. I'm looking to just stabilize the ground because it's a pasture.
It's not
for me. I got horses in there, and I'll keep them out of that area trying to get something to grow. But I just, trying to mow the rest of it going over that area, it's probably 100 by 100. I mean, driving the tractor over, it's pretty rough. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Would broom sedge work in that area, when orchard grass?
Yeah, definitely. So, anything,
We've got a product that, you know, it's got a fescue, an orchard grass, and a broom sedge combo, a 50-pound bag. I want to say it's like $250, $275, something like that. But it goes a long ways.
Yeah, it sounds very expensive, but those seeds are so small, or the seed rate is so low on some of that would work really well. And now's a good time, you know, behind the rain. You know, we started out talking about the amount of rain, Wayne, that's coming in. And if you haven't seeded, don't rush out and do it this morning, because an inch of rain is just going to float seed. Yeah. Most of it's going to wash away. So you're kind of stuck. You got to wait till this rain gets behind us. But something like that, Scott, you know, it's a, I think it was what, Cajun fescue or something along that line? Cajun 2, it's a foraging fescue with some orchard grass. That's not going to hurt livestock and even some broom.
Yeah,
sedge.
Do you have cattle out there? You broke up, Wayne.
Sorry, I'm driving. I have horses in the pasture.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see where that would be an issue whatsoever. I mean, it's actually designed for a more of a naturalized native pasture look, and that's where, you know, a lot of this came from. They're native things that grow. I mean, they're improved varieties, but they're based on the aspect of this is what natively looks native in our market. So I think something like that in the pasture, you know, get it planted. I'd get it planted pretty quickly because soil temperatures are definitely dropping off. All right?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Wayne. Have a great weekend. Scott, you know.
A nice little hiking trail on your property.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Put some ferns in there too?
Yeah, you could do that, ferns. You know, and the thing is you try, and this pertains not just, you know, hiking trails per se, you know, more dedicated hiking backpacking trails, but little walking trails within your garden. And one of the things that happens as we begin to walk on this, we have slopes with that constant long slope, and we begin to get this depression in that area. All the water runs, finds that, and wants to run down it continually. And that's one of the things, you know, don't be afraid to go out and use some timber, some things of that nature, and kind of step it so that you have flat runs, then you step down to another long flat run. I mean, that's what they do. Appalachian Trail.
That's what they used to, yeah. I mean, and they didn't use timbers. I mean, they just cut it in with their tractor or hand and then tiered it.
Yeah, so and that's how you construct a hiking trail you may see through the mountains. You know, you go, you know, even in the Midlands, you go to a state park, you see a developed hiking trail. You go to a national forest, you see a developed hiking trail. Is you're never going to be successful growing a lot of plant material because it's so compacted if it's heavily used. So although it may be back to the native soil or subsoil rocks and dirt, what we see is if we can figure out how to divert that water as it begins to run down the trail, how do we divert it off to the side of the trail so that we don't get a 200-foot run of water building, because water's, you know, the power that moving water has is just phenomenal.
Oh yes.
And when we see that in a landscape, that can wreak havoc. So
like you said earlier, in an area like that, go back with native that grows in that area right there.
Mm-hmm. If you can, that's the best thing to do. If you're in your landscape, and I see this a lot, you see estate lots, estate homes, where we're talking 1, 2, 3 acre lots, and we see a lot of that in our real estate today. And part of that is folks want that outdoor experience, okay? But they want to develop the landscape. So I think this is a kind of an important thing to learn. You know, do a little bit of research on, you know, trail construction. It's not that hard to do a mattock, lay some timbers down. You got to cut them in a little bit in the bottom, drill holes through them, drive some rebar through them to stabilize them until everything kind of the soil and earth helps hold it. And don't be afraid to do that. I mean, I know it makes it a little aggravating if you're trying to use a wheelbarrow or something, but if you got slope, you got some erosion, it's your best way to fix it. So
use the limestone that you find out there on the property.
Exactly.
You could use that.
Stack up rocks, you name it. So, Scott, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Ron and Greer for the last couple of minutes here on the Yard Pro Show. Good morning, Ron, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, good morning. I had a bag of that aquifer, the pellets, and I put it down on the yard when we were real dry there about a week or two ago. But I'm just, because I've had it for, you know, I bought it from y'all a couple years ago, I guess. And I thought, wow, it's getting pretty dry. Maybe I'll put this down. So I put it down, but I'm just curious, you know, when's a good time? How should I view that in its proper use when you put it down? You know what I mean?
What product are you talking about, Ron? I'm kind of at a loss.
It's the aquifer. It looks like fertilizer, but it's for water. It can come in a little spray thing, or you can buy a 50-pound bag of it or something like that.
That's probably
soil wetting agent.
Yeah, soil wetting agent.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting. I mean, it can be useful because soil wetting agents, the way they work, they enable to soil or for soil to process the water differently. Now, there are all kind of soil wetting agents out there. They're ones that just hold water. They're ones that help water, you know, in a wet situation. They drive water through the profile deeper. You know, that product in a drought situation can be very useful because the product I think you're referencing is going to aid with retention of water probably in the top 1 to 2 inches of soil profile. So when you use those products, get them out, but they have to be saturated and drenched in with a fair amount of water pretty quickly. So if you put that out in the last day or two, we're in pretty good shape with the amount of rain coming this week.
Well, I put it out about a day or two before we had the last rain, so
okay.
It could be pretty good then.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
How long does that last?
Normally with that application, you'll probably get about, I'd say, 3 to 4 weeks, which should get you to about where you need to be with that product because, you know, it looks like we're getting ready to get back into a wet season.
Okay. Now, the whole object is I just don't know when to put that down, and I realize, you know, we had these dry spots.
Yeah.
And I don't seem to be able to get enough water on stuff, and I got to be careful not to put too much water on stuff.
That is correct. And that's where that product is useful. So, all right. Ron, you have a great weekend. All right, thank you. Folks, we are wrapping up the first half of the Yard Pro Show. Scott, when we come back, I want to get into large patch, poannual germination, and all that good jazz. You're listening to the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts this morning, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is an absolute delight to be here. It is Saturday, October the 19th. It's rather cloudy and dreary in the upstate. Looks like it's already begun to rain in the Midlands, wouldn't you say? Scott's our local...
It's my part-time job.
Yeah.
Meteorologist.
You're not a meteorologist. You didn't go to school for that. Can't say that.
You can't deny me that.
You can't say that. You didn't go to school for that.
I can be anything I want to.
I'm just saying. You can't say
that. I did go to
that.
School.
Yeah, but not for that. You can't call yourself that. Hmm. Weatherologist. How about that?
Hobbyologist?
Hobbyologist. Scott, our resident hobbyologist. He has lots of hobbies, by the way. From riding bikes to, and I'm talking like pedal bikes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, pedal bikes. And let's see what else. Oh.
I got to live to be 150.
You're really into barbecuing and grilling.
Not as good as you, though.
I don't know about that. I'm pretty good, though.
You are pretty good.
I enjoy it. I'm a one-trick pony. Boston butts, that's it. But you get into more things. Right?
Yeah, I started smoking a lot of chuck roast.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you never invite me over for dinner. But see, we talk about this.
See, I don't need you to critique my food.
I'm not going to critique your food.
Oh, whatever. You'd be like, that's pretty good, but mine's better.
No, I'd be like, man, this is outstanding because I didn't have to cook it.
Yeah.
Right?
And then would you stay and help and clean up?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Okay.
I mean,
maybe I'll invite you over one day.
Yeah, I'll stay and help clean up. That's not a big deal. I mean, it's a barbecue grill. It's not that hard to clean.
Well, and I'm talking about the grill. I'm talking about all the dishes.
I'm not cleaning
dishes.
See,
that's what I...
And it keeps me outside. So, Scott, before we digress into... You know, but we talk about that barbecuing. It's a perfect time of year to get out there, grill out, enjoy the backyard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to enjoy the backyard, you got to have a good living space in the backyard. Now is a great time. Things are slowing down. You're not mowing grass every week. Things are beginning to slow down in the landscape. A good fall-winter project... is to build what? An outdoor living space. That we have a ton of different products. Literally, that's funny. No
a
pun
ton
included.
Because we sell
it
by the ton.
Yeah, we sell it by the ton. We have tons of selection, a wide variety of selection at all retail stores. Why is it important to memorize our website, www.carolinafreshfarms.com? Why is that important? Because there you will find a link to a retail store nearest you. And the best thing you could do is swing by one day. We're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturdays from 8 to noon. Swing by, take a look. Nearly every retail location we have now has some type of, all retail locations have some type of display area, especially with hardscapes, to give you an idea of what you could create within your lawn or your landscape in your backyard, your front yard, wherever you want it. But an outdoor living space is just such a neat thing to have here in South Carolina. That's what is so nice about this state. We have what some call shoulder seasons. I call them transitional periods, fall and spring. Well, the weather is just fantastic. I mean, you couldn't ask for better weather than what we had this week. Now, what it has done, Scott, it has really kind of hurt us a little bit. Or not hurt us, it snuck up on us. I looked at our temperatures, soil temperatures. Because this time of year, day length is really shortened. I mean, it's dark when you get up in the morning, and by the time you get home and eat dinner, or even before you eat dinner, it's dark. The day length has shortened. The season has come to an end, right?
Mm-hmm.
The soil temps are now beginning to drop, and they're dropping pretty quickly. And the Midlands, Columbia, South Carolina, your current soil temperature is 58 right now. Your 24 average is 65, and your five-day average has been 69.8. So you kind of see where we're going, where we've been in the last 24 hours, where we are currently. I don't know if that 58, if you're going to get much higher than that today, for the simple fact that it's cloudy, rainy, and in the 50s. So you're probably not going to see it go up. The upstate, you're about 3 degrees cooler than that. In the upstate of South Carolina. So let's just pull it up real quick. What do you say, Scott?
Do it.
Greenville, South Carolina, current 57, 24 average, only 1 degree, 2 degrees off. 24 average, 63.8. 5 day average, 66.8. So why is this important?
Because guess what's germinated?
What begins to germinate when the soil temperatures reach 70? And I'm talking not reach it going up from low to high. From going high to low, what begins to germinate?
Poa.
And what else? My good friend, henbit, purple dead nettle. You know henbit's in the mint family.
Really? I never knew that.
Yeah, square stem, man.
Oh, you've got to show me that trick.
Yeah, I need to show you that, man. You can roll the stem of henbit between your index and thumb, and you can feel it. It is a square,
I've been
a perfect
that for
square.
Almost 17 years now.
Almost 17 years now, and you still don't know it.
No, never knew that.
It's new every time you hear it, right? So, no, but all of these cool season weeds, these annual cool season weeds, winter weeds as we call them, begin to germinate when the soil temperature drops to 70. The other thing that happens when that soil temperature is in the 70s or the upper 60s and we get excessive moisture is what?
Fungus.
Fungus, large patch. I got a few calls this week, large patch evident on some zoysia lawns. So there's a lot going on, which kind of takes me back to the text. And by the way, if you're listening, we really, really greatly appreciate it. But become a participant today, 1-800-347-1063. The phone lines are open. If not, you're going to have to listen to me ramble on about certain things and
please
poke
call.
Fun that Scott. See, Scott needs some help because he's please afraid I'm going to poke fun at him. Give us a call at 1-800-347-1063, and as always, text us at 71307. Scott, the text lines during the break, we got a few. Should I not put out my prodiming this morning because of the coming rain this weekend? It's hard to say. We'll go to our hobbyologist, Scott, over here.
Just don't know how much rain we're going to get.
See, you can't predict it either, can you?
I'm good, but, you know.
Yeah, we don't know how much.
I mean, yesterday they were calling for what, an inch?
Yeah, at
or
least
more?
An inch. An inch during the day and a half inch overnight. So we're talking an inch and a half. That's in the upstate. If you're in the Midlands, let's see, this number is, what area code is it? It's an 864, who knows? I mean, probably in the upstate. But if it were a half an inch of rain and we knew it was only a half an inch of rain, I'd say go for it, get out there now, sling the predominant, get it out.
Band.
Because it needs to be out. Soil temperatures are now below 70 degrees. my concern is even fertilizer can float and move with heavy rainfall. So if it were me, I think I would wait until tomorrow. Because the rain's going to move out tonight, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I would wait till tomorrow to put that out. How and when do you winter prep on Bermuda? What is a good ground cover for a wooded area, dry clay area? Would like to be able to use the area as a walking low maintenance. Thanks. All right, so how do we prepare Bermuda for winters? A couple things. 007 predominating is probably the main thing. We should have prepared the Bermuda, and we talked about this back in September a little bit, not as much because it's so hot and dry, kind of slipped by all of us. Typically in the month of August, September, we'd like to see an application in August of like 20-025 Expo, high potassium. A lot of potassium. Potassium aids water movement within cells, plant cells, so it keeps the plant hydrated. That's important. That's especially important when the grass is dormant. It senesces. It's asleep for the winter. Is we need some water movement between those plant cells so that we keep the plant cells hydrated so that we don't get desiccation. Okay? Now that we're at this point, the best way to prepare that Bermuda lawn is to get the 007 predominating. That's a little bit of, you know, that application, you'll get about a quarter of a pound of potassium or so per 1,000 out, which is good. And you will also get some pre-emergent to help with your winter weeds, poannua, henbit, things of that nature. So that's a good way to do that. Scott, we're going to go to Thomas and Greer. Good morning, Thomas, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, good morning. Got hopefully a quick question for you. A few weeks back, sodded some large patches in my yard. And I'm assuming the fescue sod came from you all because you recommended the landscaper I used. 98% of it took. There were a few strips that looked really questionable, but, you know, a day or two after it was down. And those are still, I mean, just really brown. They haven't caught on at all. And I was wanting to reseed over. What type of fescue seed should I buy from you, and is it too late?
It's borderline late, Thomas. I don't know. You know, the soil temperatures are still in the upper 60s, which is good. And looking at the weather, they're probably going to stay somewhere in the 60 range at least for another 10 to 14 days. So that being the case, I would do it, but you need to have a sense of urgency about it. You need to get it done now. If the sod, more than likely, if we recommended a contractor, I would only hope that it came from us. Imagine it is probably our blend, Carolina Blue 2. And we have that seed readily available either in the Anderson or the Duncan store. And to make your life convenient, we're open today till noon at both of those locations. So you can, you know, if you're out and about, it sounds like I hear the asphalt in the background and you're traveling. If you're out and about and have time, get by the store by noon today. They can sell you that seed. But the Carolina Blue 2. Perfect. So Carolina Blue 2, and if you haven't done it, pick up a bag of 16, 25, 12 starter fertilizer on that fescue lawn and get it applied as well. Now, we'll tell you,
okay,
don't run home and put this out today. With the amount of rain that we may get, it looks like some pretty heavy bands of rain coming our way. If you look at the future radar cast later today, I think I would wait till tomorrow to get all of this done. And keep it wet, okay. Keep it consistently wet, you know, in the afternoons, if it's windy, even though it's cool, if that humidity's low, the sun's out and it's windy, make sure you put a little water on it a couple times in midday to keep that seedbed moist.
Okay. Now, I put out the 16252 right after they sodded the yard, which was, like I say, first of the month.
Then you should be good on fertilizer.
I'm sure I wasted reapply.
You should be good on fertilizer to get it seeded. And then what I would like for you to do maybe the first or second week of November is probably switch it to like 2505, some higher nitrogen. Once you get that seed up and you've mowed it once or twice here in about 2 or 3 weeks, then I would get out there with some good nitrogen. The 2505 is what I normally suggest this time of year. So
I cut it for the first time on Thursday.
Good.
And of course, I raised my blade as high as I could.
Yep. And one thing you may want to do before you do the seeding in these areas, those areas that you're going to see, drop that mower height tomorrow and cut that down a little bit because that grass is growing. Don't be afraid to drop it, cut it down. It is going to scalp it a little bit. It'll be okay. It's going to grow back. Get your seed out.
Okay.
That way we get some sunlight penetrating down to the soil level for the next 7 to 10 to 14 days to get the seed germinated.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Thomas. Have a great weekend.
All right. Bye.
So, Scott, we just went through pretty quickly with Thomas that process of seeding. And one thing I can't say that's very, very important, I know I still have a Bradford pear. I think we talked about it last
week.
And I thinned it out to get sunlight. The reason being, we got to have sunlight to germinate seed as well. These dark, dark areas, although fescue will tolerate and grow somewhat in shaded areas, we got to figure out how to get some sunlight there to get the seed germinated. And if your lawn, in Thomas's sense, he fertilized a few weeks ago, so I know his yard's growing and probably growing pretty quickly. We don't want the existing grass to shadow those new seedlings too much. So the best thing you can do if you're seeding is mow it down pretty low. And I know that sounds crazy, but here's the thing. This time of the year, fescue is very resilient. We can scalp it, and 2 weeks from now, it's 4 inches tall. More resilient than a warm season grass. If you got a Bermuda lawn, you got a Zoysia lawn, you need to leave the height where it is right now. It's quick growing. If you scalp it, you're going to be looking at a scalped yard until next May, until it transitions, no matter where you live in this state. So you got to be comfortable where your mowing height is today. Leave it alone. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Scott, I want to get back to this text because I started about the how do you winter prep the Bermuda. What about ground covers for a wooded area? And a wooded area that's shaded, you know, we talked a little bit earlier in the show about that, but some ground covers you can buy that are non-native, commercially produced. I mentioned Vinca Minor. Okay, and I know some people may cringe, don't buy the major. The major's the bigger leaf, the longer vines. Vinca Minor stays real close to the ground, great product. Beautiful little, it's periwinkle, and it's a perennial form. But beautiful little purplish bloom in the spring of the year, just kind of neat plant. One of my favorites in a wooded area as an understory to cover, blanket the ground. Another one is a juga. We forget about a juga. Been around for a long time. A juga is a great one. What else can you think of?
I love ferns.
Ferns. Here's another one. If you're really shaded, and we should have told, who was that caller earlier? Was it Wayne? First half of the show? Another one, Pachysandra. If it's densely shaded, Pachysandra is another good one. Now, Pachysandra likes a real fertile soil. So we need to amend that with maybe some of our ag soil that we sell, till that end of that area, amend it because it is very fertile, high organic content. That's what Pachysandra seems to like. But, man, there's a host of neat things. Ferns, like you have said multiple times.
And endless options of ferns.
Hundreds of varieties. Hostas. Okay, when we think of ground covers, don't just think of things that trail and stay 2 inches tall.
Now you're talking about a buffet for deer.
Oh, really? I didn't realize. Yeah, I guess so. They do like that, don't they? But hostas. I mean, literally hundreds of varieties of hostas. Now is a good time to plant. Fall, don't forget, fall is a good planting time of the year. Now that we're getting rain, I know we're still in drought in most of the state. Some of the state in exceptional drought, or not exceptional, but extreme drought. But if you have the means to give it a little bit of water, if we're going to get this rain once a month, something along that, once a week, then we should be good.
Another great, I mean, you can go on, actually I was on there the other day, Clemson's HGIC's webpage. They've got a great list of plants, you know, for that specific area.
That is true, and that's very simple. We don't think about that enough, but you can go to Clemson Extension or go to Google or your favorite, I hate to promote, especially someone like Google, personal thing, I guess. But you can go to your favorite search engine, and you can type in Clemson HGIC, Home Garden Information Center. Okay, Home and Garden Information Center. There are a lot of extension agents who have made these publications, and it is laid out really nice where you can find things from landscaping to growing small fruits in your or vegetable gardens at your home lawn to canning to
everything. Deer resistant plants. Yeah. I mean, they have you name
a lot of good information there. Scott, I want to go back to the text. Can you tell the difference in the rye and fescue, and will the rye die out next spring? Thanks, guys. And I think this is tied to the previous text, which says, If I have some bare spots in my fescue yard, is there an advantage of planting some perennial rye along with fescue seed to quickly fill in those areas? If you're out in pretty good growing areas, the perennial rye is going to germinate a little bit quicker, but the soil temperatures are still warm enough to germinate the fescue pretty quickly. I think at this point I would stay away from the perennial rye with one exception. If I'm in a densely shaded, dark, wet area, I think the perennial ryegrass could be of benefit to mix in with the fescue. These new perennial ryegrass varieties, perennial ryegrass, it's a misnomer. You think because it's perennial, it persists year-round. It does in the Northeast and the northern climates, but here in our climate, it doesn't. Perennial ryegrass, once it gets hot, it's going to die out. It can't tolerate the heat. Now, these new varieties have gotten much better with that. So if we have an area
I've seen stragglers come back, but very little.
Yeah, and I've seen that even occasionally in open areas in a golf course, but typically it's where it's close to an irrigation head, a low area in the fairway where it stays wet, or a colliver green where they're irrigating the greens and all the water runoff keeps that collar really wet or the approach really wet, and you may see perennial ryegrass hang around. But typically it doesn't unless you're in densely
shaded area for protection.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I would probably kind of avoid it. But, yes, as we get closer in the winter, we get someone that has a new construction in the dead of winter. Hey, I really want to sod it, but I don't want to take the risk with zoysia because it is dead of winter. You could do it. The risk isn't that great. But sometimes I say, I just need something temporary. And when we get into the winter and when the soil temperature is cooler, perennial ryegrass does seem to germinate a little bit better and fescue a little quicker than fescue as the soil temperatures get cooler. But right now, the soil temperature is warm enough, I think I would stay with fescue. I have quite a few large roots above ground. What is the best way to deal with those? And the other one, what is the phone number again? It's getting a little bit late in the show. I'll give it out. I don't know if we can get to you, but we'll try. 1-800-347-1063 is the phone number. What about these large roots above ground? I'm real keen on when you're doing construction, anything of that nature. As a matter of fact, my neighbor up the street on the corner had a house fire a year ago, and they're under a complete renovation. And he and I had a little discussion. He's got some maple trees. Well, the contractors were pulling off. He's got a double, nice wide double driveway. We live on a cul-de-sac. Contractors could park on the curb, but oh no, they had to park in the backyard on top of the root zone of these trees.
Maple.
But we're talking about a maple tree. You see those big surface roots. You actually can remove those pretty safely and not damage the tree because you got a lot of roots underneath the soil. I'm real keen on protecting trees and being very careful with your trees. Soil compaction, cars parking on tree root area, the root zone area, can compact it enough where that tree's going to die, especially if we go under undue stresses like the drought that we're in the midst of right now. That can be very detrimental to trees to the point of death, even 50-year-old trees to the point of death.
Because those trees are designed to do that.
Yeah. So removing roots and with not knowing the species of the tree or whatnot, I would say as a general rule of thumb, roots that have come to the surface, if you have three or four or five or six of those from one tree interfering with your lawn, I really don't have an issue with you cutting out the surface roots. Dig out around them. Make sure you make a nice clean cut. I don't have a huge issue with that. I don't think those few roots missing are going to be that detrimental to your tree. Do you agree with that? Disagree? You don't know what to think.
I go with that.
You know? I mean, and where are they? If they're close to the trunk of the tree, not as detrimental as if they're out on the drip line. Because those roots, they're big, big and fat. It looks like a stem or a branch of the tree coming up to the soil. Yeah, they may not be causing that much issue anyway. So if they're annoying you, I think I would go out there and cut them out. Wouldn't you?
Do it.
All right, so Scott, we're going to finish up. How do you get poa out of fescue? Crickets. That's what I hear, crickets. That's a tough one. You know, the best thing on that is prevention. There's a way that you can use some pre-emergence prior to overseeding. It's all about the timing. It's too late now. Now that you have the POA, it's going to be very difficult from a residential perspective. There are just not many herbicides out there that are labeled to take POA out of fescue that aren't going to be detrimental to your fescue, that aren't restricted use, that are labeled for residential turf. So at this point, we can do it. Now, one thing about POA that's very interesting, and I did a little paper on this years ago. POA also, in the future, remember, POA can be controlled to a degree. POA lights compacted wet areas. Compacted wet areas. So when you begin to see POA coming into a lawn, it tells me it's probably compacted. It's probably an area that's staying too wet. So if you can address that with some core aerification, things of that nature, that's going to help eliminate.
That one, it popped right up.
What about roots from a magnolia tree? My neighbor's tree is a few feet from my house. Will the roots grow and damage my brick fence? Yes, they certainly can. And what you can do is just, you can go down that side of that fence, dig a trench, cut those roots.
Yep.
And it shouldn't cause too much damage to that tree if we're just pruning the roots on one side. So keep those cut out. Folks, we're wrapping up the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. We invite you during the week to visit us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all of our retail stores throughout the great state of South Carolina. Scott, I guess we'll talk to them again next week, right?
Next week.
It's been a great time, folks. We hope you have a happy week gardening, and check us out during the week at carolinafreshfarms.com.